What kind of equipment do you have on board these particular aircraft?
Equipment-wise,
To calibrate the nav aids.
We will have a standard set of receivers that you would have in any other commercial or corporate aircraft. Dual VORs, sometimes four VORs, sometimes four nav receivers. We'll on our Learjets, I know that I have two comms that are dedicated to regular communication, then two comms dedicated to support the people in back. Quite often it's redundant. We have the package that the airplane has to fly and navigate, and we have the package that the technician uses to do the calibrations by.
Wow.
Now, the interesting thing is all of our radios, our VORs, are actually peaked to about 5% accuracy, higher than you'd ever be able to buy off the commercial market. Except for our transponders. We have the absolutely worst calibrated transponders in the aviation industry. And there's a reason for this. When we establish a new transponder-based facility, we fly out to the maximum range that that transponder is supposed to see the target, and then flip the switch to this lowest legal standard of airworthiness so that we can verify that the ground-based transponder can see somebody out there who's let his radio go for too many years, but it's still airworthy.
Well, so in other words, You set it down so that it works to the clunkiest of standards and still gets through.
Correct.
Well, that's important, because that's a significant part of air traffic safety up there, is being
yes.
able to see the transponder. I know you're, what, let's see now if I get this right. If you're flying VFR, you're supposed to have the transponder set at 1200.
Last time I flew, yeah, I think so.
I can't tell you. It's been a while since I've turned a transponder on. Well, it's been a while since I've flown too, but... It's a very important job, and it's a job that nobody ever knows about. You know, everybody always talks about the FAA with this, and of course, being over at the FAA Pavilion, I saw a lot of stuff over there that I had no clue that the FAA was involved with. You know, you only hear about the FAA with runway incursions, near misses, and if somebody does an oopsie somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting side effect that the public might think hilarious, it's left hand, right hand of the FAA, where if you may have had the unfortunate circumstance of being ramp checked and fortunately, hopefully passed because everybody's safe and keeps their airplane airworthy, we get ramp checked.
Oh, geez.
We are a Part 135 operator, and so when we land at a ramp, an ASI will come up to our airplane and go through the paperwork with our air crews, just even worse than they'll go through with you guys, because they're trying to make sure that we're meeting everybody else's standards.
Yeah, you've got to lead the way. If you set the standards, you've got to go by them. There's no double standards with that.
Correct.
Have you guys ever been busted for that?
We have. I'm in the maintenance organization, so we write self-disclosure letters to local FISDO about once every 2 weeks.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody might have found something.
It's... Again, based on ISO 9000, AS9110, the process is continually improving. So when we find something where we dropped the ball, do we hide it? No, we make it public, and we want our auditors, the FISDO, to help us correct it.
And more importantly, you yourselves want to be kept on the ball as well, because you get complacent every now and then.
Yes, sir.
Been there, done that. What is on the future of the FAA? I understand that they're coming out with WAAS, Wide Area Augmentation Service.
Yes.
Our system. Have you guys started checking those yet?
We flew WAAS approaches before you even knew that they were going to exist. We had developmental red boxes from the manufacturers to work on developing the auditing process, the inspection process for WAAS and LAAS long before the public knew it would happen. So yes, we were when GPS-based navigation came out, our manager, Mr. Accardi, gave us the challenge that we would do 1,500 approaches minimum a year, converted from ILS till GPS. And as WAAS and LAAS roll on, we continue to establish, and again, it's not so much flight inspection as looking for the places. We're just verifying that what we've put into the database is the waypoints you're going to follow to the end of the runway, aren't in the middle of the tree, aren't on top of somebody's antenna, and that the satellite signal is recoverable there and that the WASP signal is recoverable there.
Sounds like a lot of thought and planning went into all of this. How has it worked out so far with WASP?
I haven't heard any statistics on how well the process is going. I just know that we're cranking out approaches that keep the flying public, give them the ability to fly that as soon as their airport has the capability.
Sounds like going to be a very interesting future here for you guys with the wide area approach system. I know I haven't yet actually been on board an airplane that has flown it, to my knowledge. Now, I have a friend of mine who is a charter pilot, and he's taken me up in a couple of airplanes that have had full glass cockpits, and it's just astounding the amount of how much we rely on the nav aids and GPS and all of this stuff. And it's very comforting to know that you guys are out there keeping an eye on it. You just don't set it up and say, well, that's it, Harry, we're done.
Nope.
You gotta tune it and tweak it every now and then. Maintenance is
the
very
key.
Important. Well, Thomas, it's been good talking to you. You have a great day out here.
Thank
at
you
Oshkosh.
So much, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Fast Eddie. We are going to rebroadcast this interview on EAA Radio, AM 1210. FM 100.7, and you're also listening to us live on the internet at airventure.org/radio.